Hello and welcome to Speak the Words of Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where I slowly but surely explain the story of the Cosmere, more specifically the Stormlight Archive, to Mango. I've read all the Cosmere books except for White Sand. So we had a Dalinar chapter where he went and met with the Azish.
Oh, yeah, they're kind of weird.
But Navani's letter convinced them, all right, you know what, we'll try out this whole coalition thing. And then at the end of it, Dalinar collapsed because he remembered what happened to Evie.
Oh yeah, also he and Lyft kind of like bonded over having met the Night Watcher. And she stole his lunch.
We had a Dalinar flashback where Dalinar and Evie got into a fight over his, you know, his warmongeringness. Mm-hmm. The fact that he can never stop fighting. And at the end of it, he promised her, okay, look, I gotta go deal with the rift for my brother now. But once that's done,
we'll go to Kolinar for at least a year.
Yeah, and we'll see what we can do. In Kolinar, Shallan met up with Wit.
Oh, yeah. And he basically revealed to her that he's old as fuck.
And he pretty much said, I don't know why I'm here, but it's not for you. But he said that he would help her get in with the cult because he's attracted the attention of the leaders. Mm. He's like, I didn't want to attract the attention of the leaders, but I have.
I mean, it's Wit. He can't not attract attention, so.
And that was everything. This time, we start with chapter 69. Nice. Chapter 69, Free Meal, No Strings. The epigraph reads, the wilting of plants and the general cooling of the air is disagreeable, yes, but some of the tower's functions remain in place. The increased pressure, for example, persists. From drawer 1-1, second zircon. So yeah, this epigraph, it's from an Else caller, and they're pretty much talking about how the tower seems to be turning off when the Radiants were leaving, or were getting ready to leave. Like, there were things that the tower used to do. Like, it seems like it used to be able to grow plants, and it used to keep the air warmer for people up there. And it stopped doing that towards the end.
It can sense that they're giving up.
Something happened, yeah. So Kaladin, this is a Kaladin chapter. It starts in his point of view, and Kaladin is lashing a stone upward just slightly to make it not quite float. And then pretty much immediately after, there's just, like, screams. And Kaladin hides with Shallan and Adolin as a yellow Spren appears. The Spren seems confused, unable to find the rock that he'd only slightly lashed. A fused appeared from the sky and reprimanded the Spren. The Spren had sensed Kaladin's use of Stormlight, thinking it to be a Fabrial, but couldn't find the source. They leave as the wall guard approaches. And so they figure out Kaladin can hold Stormlight without drawing attention, but the second he tries to lash something, it draws the attention of the Void Spren. Shallan's light weavings don't draw their attention for some reason, and Pattern says that the light weaving powers are quieter than Kaladin's. Whatever that means. Back at the tailor's shop, they're getting ready to go to a party where Elokar wants to try and contact the city's light eyes. Adolin is very excited about being with this tailor again so that he can be at the edge of fashion, and Kaladin is making fun of him for that. And Adolin just says that they all still like Kaladin even though he dresses like trash. Adolin makes plans to go out drinking with Scar and Drahi later, which surprises Kaladin, and the two bridgemen tell him about when they saved Adolin from falling into the chasm at the end of Words of Radiance. And they're like, yeah, we've been friends ever since.
Oh.
Shallan gives them all light weavings to change their faces, and they all set out. Adolin immediately started joking with Scar and Drahi. Dalinar wouldn't have liked to hear they'd gone out drinking. Generals weren't supposed to fraternize with the rank and file. Adolin could get away with things like that. As he listened, Kaladin found himself feeling ashamed of his earlier attitude. The truth was, he was feeling pretty good these days. Yes, there was a war, and yes, the city was seriously stressed, but ever since he'd found his parents alive and well, he'd been feeling better. That wasn't so uncommon a feeling for him. He felt good lots of days. Trouble was, on the bad days, that was hard to remember. At those times, for some reason, he felt like he had always been in darkness, and always would be. Why was it so hard to remember? Did he have to keep slipping back down? Why couldn't he stay up here in the sunlight where everyone else lived? Oh, Kaladin. Kaladin is worried about drawing attention if he summons his Shardblade, and thinks that he should have brought a spear instead. But Adolin points out that he's disguised as a light eye, so he should be using a sword. Kaladin says, maybe I'm one of those punchy guys. Adolin stopped in place and grinned at Kaladin. Did you just say punchy guys? You know, Ardents who train to fight unarmed. Hand to hand. Hand to hand. Right, Adolin said. Or punchy guys, as everyone calls them. Kaladin met his eyes, then found himself grinning back. It's the academic term. Sure, like swordy fellows or spearish chaps. I once knew a real axolacious bloke, Kaladin said. He was great at psychological fights. Psychological fights? He could really get inside someone's head. Adolin frowned as they walked. Get inside. Oh! Adolin chuckled, slapping Kaladin on the back. You talk like a girl sometimes. I mean that as a compliment. When I was imprisoned for daring to accuse Amaram, he was the only light eyes who stood up for me. Adolin Colin was simply a good person. You couldn't hate a man like him. You kind of had to like him. They arrive at the party. Elokar and Adolin are going to search for potential allies. Scar and Drahi are going to go to the Dark-Eyed Guard tent to see if they can learn anything about the Cult of Moments. And Kaladin is going to the Light-Eyed Guard tent to learn about the Wall Guard and Azor. Instead, as soon as he's alone, Kaladin immediately just goes off to inspect the wall itself. A squad of soldiers from the Wall Guard approach him, and Kaladin realizes that somehow the light weaving on his brands had failed. They ask him if he's a deserter, and when he shows them his slave brands, they seem interested in him. They invite him to the Wall Guard barracks for a free meal with no strings, and Kaladin goes with them. And that is the end of the chapter. Chapter 70 is titled High Marshal Azor. The epigraph reads, "Something is happening to the sibling, capital S. I agree this is true, but the division among the Knights Radiant is not to blame. Our perceived worthiness is a separate issue. From drawer 1-1, 3rd Zircon." So it seems that whatever was happening to the tower at the end of the Knights Radiant is related to something that was happening to this capital S sibling.
That's weird.
Kaladin felt at home in the Wall Guard's barracks. He sat down at a wooden bench as one of the men fetched him a bowl of stew. The lieutenant who found him, Noro, told the other soldiers about Kaladin, and some even cheered when they heard that he had a brand from Sadeus. Noro asks about the brand, and Kaladin says that he had a disagreement with High Lord Amaram. One man, Beard, says that he used to do secret missions for Amaram, and Noro tells Kaladin to just ignore Beard, and it becomes clear quickly that the man likes to tell stories. Kaladin asks about the grain, and Noro says that it's a guard secret, but that there's always stew and bread in the barracks. Beard claims that it's his recipe, that he learned it from a horn-eater mystic at the top of a mountain, and the men all laugh. Noro tried to sell Kaladin on joining the Wall Guard, and Kaladin notices that all the men in the room were light eyes. Beard tells Kaladin that despite being a deserter, they want him to enlist in the Wall Guard and tell him that he can meet High Marshal Azor when he does his rounds later. Noro seems uncomfortable at this. Noro says that they had lost their previous commander during the riots, and Azor had appeared and led the Wall Guard when the Cult of Moments had tried to seize the city gates. He fought like a Voidbringer, another squad member said. I was there. We were almost overwhelmed. Then Azor joined us, holding aloft a gleaming shard blade. He rallied our numbers, inspired even the wounded to keep fighting. Storms felt like we had Spren at our backs, holding us up, helping us fight. Kaladin was sure that something was going on, and sure enough, when High Marshal Azor arrives, he learns a part of the truth. The High Marshal was a woman. The High Marshal was of average height for an Alethi woman, maybe just under, and wore her hair straight and short, reaching halfway down her cheeks. Her eyes were orange, and she wore a side sword with a glistening silver basket hilt. That wasn't Alethi design. Was it the aforementioned shard blade? It did have an otherworldly look about it, but why wear it instead of dismissing it? The High Marshal is a woman? Kaladin hissed. We don't talk about the Marshal's secret, Beard said. Secret? It's pretty storming obvious. Azor comes over to Kaladin's table and asks Noro who he is. He explains, and she asks who he had to kill to get a Shosh brand. Kaladin gives a signature, it's not the man I killed, it's the one I didn't. She merely grunted. He couldn't place her age. She asks if he's joining up, offering him food in return, and when he says that he isn't sure, she takes him up to the top of the wall. She guesses at his backstory and says that she doesn't care if he's dangerous, because the Voidbringers are on their doorstep. She says that the Voidbringers will burn and pillage the entire capital and probably enslave the populace, if not kill them. The Wall Guard was a chance for redemption, and she offers that chance to Kaladin. She tells him to go home for the night, think it over, and then come back the next day. Kaladin glanced to Syl, who landed on his shoulder, and then he looks out at the Voidbringer army. Are you out there, Saw? Did they bring you and the others here? Then he goes to return to the party, and he's with Elokar, and Elokar asks him what has you so thoughtful, Captain? And Kaladin says, I think I might have found us another Radiant. And that is the end of the chapter. So Kaladin thinks the High Marshal is a Radiant.
Yeah, it sounds like it, but...
There was other interesting stuff in there. Soldiers felt like they were being held up to fight. Chapter 71, A Sign of Humanity. It has Dalinar's flashback symbol, and it's 11 years ago. Dalinar's forces marched down onto the rift from the west, while Sadeas came from the east. Evie was acting like the perfect Alethi wife in public, but he often heard her weeping in private. Her unhappiness crushed his soul, and the tension between them was distracting him too much, so as they neared the rift, he decided to try and settle it. Evie says that she has been praying for the heralds to soften Dalinar's heart so that he won't slaughter all the men of the rift. Dalinar says that they're in open rebellion, and by Alethi tradition, his might gives him the right to rule. She asks for mercy, and he says that mercy is why they're in the situation in the first place. She says that she hates the monster he becomes when he kills, and asks him not to kill, to show humanity like he had done when he spared Tanalan all those years ago. They arrive at the city, and Taleb tells him that a guarded caravan had left the city recently. Taleb had a scout team tail the caravan. Dalinar wants to find out who is supplying the rift, and tells Taleb to have the men form ranks just in case, then rides up toward the city. Taleb hastily forms a vanguard to follow him. Once they get closer to the city, his armor is put on his shard plate, and Dalinar tells the soldiers to wait while he rides up to the gate of the city and waits. A little while later, young Tanalan rides out of the gates to meet him. Tanalan asks what Dalinar wants, and Dalinar reminds him of how he had spared the younger man years before. He tells Tanalan that there's no way that Dalinar will lose this battle, that the Blackthorn never loses, and Tanalan says that he would rather die than surrender. Dalinar says that if he wins, he will have to make an example of the city, that he will be forced to leave only widows and corpses. He offers Tanalan an alternative. The two of them duel, and if Dalinar wins, then the rift will surrender. If Tanalan wins, Dalinar's army will still fight, but the rift might stand a chance without Dalinar to lead them. Tanalan refuses the offer, but tells Dalinar that the men working for the High Prince that betrayed Gavilar and has been supplying the rift had just left. He then goes on to say that maybe the rebellion could have been a lie all along, intended to lure out traitors among the High Princes. Dalinar latches onto this idea, saying that they could explain why Gavilar had tried so hard not to send Dalinar here, and they agree that if Dalinar was able to chase down the men that had just left and expose the treachery, there would be no need for a battle. Tanalan would be made an official High Prince for his help. Who was it? Dalinar asked. Which High Prince? It might be best if you find out for yourself as... Who? Bright Lord Toral Sadeas. Impossible. As I said, best if you see for yourself. Dalinar tells Tanalan to open his gates to Dalinar's men and stand down while he goes after the traitor's men. He returns to his camp, fills in Taleb and Evie on what is going on, then gathers 100 elites to hunt down the traitors. And that is the end of the chapter. Chapter 72 is titled Rockfall.
That sounds... Oh.
Don't worry, it's a Shallan chapter.
Oh, he's smart. Okay, he tricked him.
Chapter 72 is titled Rockfall. It is Shallan's symbol. And the epigraph reads, The Edge Dancers are too busy relocating the tower's servants and farmers to send a representative to record their thoughts in these gemstones. I'll do it for them, then. They are the ones who will be most displaced by this decision. The Radiance will be taken in by nations, but what of all those people now without homes? From drawer 4-17, second topaz. And the topaz is the Stone Ward gemstone. Vale, Shallan, and the crew rob a local Light Eye of their food supply. She has a running banter with Vata throughout the whole thing, insisting that he's enjoying it even though he seems nervous. The guards are alerted after they fill a cart with the food, and Shallan does a big light-weaving display of horror to scare them away, but she gets shot in the mouth in the process. As they escape, Vata pulls the crossbow bolt free, and she blacks out while it heals. As they're taking the food to give to the Cult of Moments, she feels guilty as they pass hungry people around them. Wit had left a note for Shallan at that tavern they'd been in the other day, telling her that she needs to do something to get the cult's attention. She decides to do that by distributing the food to people that need extra food. She goes to the kid who she had fed before and asks him for a list of people that need more food. He gives her the list, and she asks him to look for a book titled Mythica that was about the unmade. They give away the entire cart full of food, except for one sausage. Vata got the sausage. And that is the end of the chapter. I shit you not, this chapter stalled me from reading this book for like half of a week. That's why I cut it down so much. I got to this chapter and I was like, what the fuck is this stupid heist? Why, in the middle of all of this, why am I reading this fucking mail heist?
For some food.
Yeah, just in the middle of everything else. Chapter 73 is titled Telling Witch Stories, and it has Kaladin symbol. The epigraph reads, I am worried about the tower's protections failing. If we are not safe from the unmade here, then where? And it's from drawer 3-11 with a it's from a garnet. Garnet is the gemstone of the Lightweavers. Kaladin is patrolling the inside of the wall with the wall guard, and Beard is trying to convince them all that not only had Beard met Dalinar, but had also been given the Blackthorn's knife. Kaladin liked his squad, which consisted of Beard, a man named Ved, Noro, a man named Alaward, another man named Vasiliv, and Kaladin. They pass by Adolin and the guards make fun of his fancy clothing, which prompts Beard to tell another story about having to swim across a vat of dye to save a prince's daughter. As he spends time with the men, he learns that there's a social ladder for the Light Eyes as well. The guards point out the differences between a Light Eye of their rank and one of Adolin's when Kaladin compares them. They talk about how the refugees hate them and that half of the refugees belong to the Cult of Moments. Beard says that he has to infiltrate the cult and try to marry their high priestess. Unfortunately, he's terrible in a harem, and the last one he'd been in, he had made all the other men jealous. I love Beard.
Beard is full of shit.
He is. They meet up with another group of guards. They're supposed to protect a grain wagon that they were giving to the Light Eyes as a bribe to keep them from attacking the wall guard. A group of people in violet masks approach the guard, they're members of the Cult of Moments, and the guards get outnumbered quickly. Kaladin tells Noro that they have to retreat, and they do so, returning to the wall. Noro tells the squad that they're manning the wall in half an hour. Kaladin asks Beard where the food comes from, and he tells Kaladin that he doesn't know everything, but that the first thing Azor did when they took command was secure a monastery and claim the Soulcaster inside. He isn't sure how they use it without being noticed, however. Kaladin points out that the High Marshal's Shardblade doesn't have a gemstone on the pommel, and Beard says that maybe it's broken. Kaladin wondered if maybe Azor had an honor blade that would allow her to soulcast. Beard tells Kaladin that at one point he had heard voices telling him to join the palace guard, but that the High Marshal had told them not to listen. Kaladin notices that Beard is wearing an armband that would traditionally have a glyph ward, but that Beard has none on it. He says that he knows about made-up stories and that nobody is watching over them, then walks away. Kaladin has a conversation with Syl about God and whether one exists beyond the Almighty, and he tells her that at this point he isn't sure that whether or not there is a God is something humanity is able to answer. So pretty much at this point, Sanderson is saying Kaladin is agnostic. Drums begin to sound, and Kaladin immediately realizes that the wall is under attack. Before Noro can give the order, Kaladin has the soldiers forming ranks on the wall. The fused clash with the wall guard further along, but don't reach Kaladin and his men. As they're putting their weapons away, he apologizes to Noro for taking command, but the other man just dismisses it and is like, it's fine, whatever. Kaladin tries to go help the wounded, but Noro tells him that they have surgeons to do that. He tells Kaladin to go relax and not be so eager to rush towards danger. And that is the end of the chapter.
But I am a surgeon.
No gemstone on the Shardblade. Chapter 74, Swift Spren. The epigraph reads, oh, and this is a Shallan chapter, by the way. It has a Shallan POV. The epigraph reads, today I leap from the tower for the last time. I felt the wind dance around me as I fell all the way along the eastern side, past the tower, and to the foothills below. I'm going to miss that. From drawer 10-1, Sapphire. So obviously a Windrunner. Vale is delivering food to the urchin from before, and then goes to check on the other people that she had been feeding. The beggars had taken to calling Vale Swift Spren, on account of her seemingly walking through walls to rob rich people of their food. She starts to disassociate into a persona named Swift Spren, and uses her light weaving to make herself look more like a Spren. Then she leads the Cult of Moments through the streets and begins to lose herself, and she hears voices. Surrender. Give me your passion, your pain, your love. Give up your guilt. Embrace the end. Shallan, I am not your enemy. The last one stood out. She came to herself, trembling. She stopped in place. The others stopped around her. The illusion continued to stream even when she wasn't walking. The cultist chanting broke off and some fell to their knees. She still looks like a spren through her light weaving, and she tells the crowd that the spren they follow are dark and they're liars. She orders them to stop what they're doing and return to their homes, then creates a powerful flash of light to scare them away. She disappears into an alleyway and becomes Vale again. Vale wanted to be a hero of the streets, and it was clashing with Shallan's sense of logic. She wants to become radiant to deal with it and begins to break down over not knowing who to be. Vale wanders the city until she finds a group of people gathered and singing. She notices that Wit is in the center, leading them. He hadn't spoken to her since their last meeting and had disappeared. She goes back to the tailor's house without talking to him, where she contemplates flirting with Kaladin for a little bit, but Radiant is against this as their oaths to Adolin were more important. Vale doesn't really care what Shallan wants, but lets Shallan take over again anyways. Shallan found Elokar drinking wine in the kitchen, going over a list of the houses he'd been approaching through parties. He asks about Pattern, who he can see on her skirt, saying that the design looks familiar to him.
Oh.
Elokar nodded. I used to see myself as a hero like you. I imagined claiming the Shattered Plains in my father's name. Vengeance for blood spilled. It doesn't even matter now, does it? That we won.
Oh, he would have been a light weaver, because he was also lying to himself.
Mm-hmm.
About being a good king.
We have Yirithiru, and we defeated a large army of Voidbringers. There are few people remaining to whom I can still be a hero, Radiant. This city, my son, Storms. He was a baby when I last saw him. He'd be 3 now, locked in the palace. Shallan set down her food, said wait here, and then went to fetch her sketch pad and pencils, then returned to Elokar and started drawing. What are you doing? I don't have a proper sketch of you, Shallan said. I want one. Elokar was a good man, in his heart at least. Shouldn't that matter most? We'll save them, Shallan whispered. You'll save them. It will be all right. Elokar watched silently. Once she lifted her pencil, Elokar reached past her and rested his fingers on the page. It depicted Elokar kneeling on the ground, beaten down, clothing ragged. But he looked upward, outward, chin raised. He wasn't beaten. No, this man was noble, regal. Is this what I look like? Yes, it's what you could be, at least. May I have it? She handed it to him.
Aww.
Thank you. He almost seemed to be in tears. She goes back to her rooms, where Ishna gives her a note from the Cult of Moments, telling her to join the revel in 2 nights, to bring food, and to come alone. That is the end of the chapter. I regret to inform you that this is chapter 75, only read, and it has Dalinar's flashback symbol from 11 years ago. Dalinar and his elites run across a broken hillside, chasing after the traitor High Prince, the thrill burning inside him. They found the caravan of troops scrambling to arms at the mouth of a canyon. They wore Sadeus's colors. Dalinar charged among them, swinging Oathbringer and leaving men with burnt-out eyes. Things don't add up to him, as he wonders why a secret envoy would be wearing their High Prince's colors. He shouts for his soldiers to pull back, but it's too late, and he sees soldiers standing on the canyon walls above him. The ground shakes, and a rock slide drops on top of Dalinar and his soldiers. When the rocks settle, he finds himself buried and his armor mostly shattered, but alive. This had been a trap. Sadeus wasn't a traitor. Tanalan had lured him here to crush him like a coward. He hears soldiers walking around above, looking for his corpse to confirm that he was dead. He waits as they dig him out, preparing to strike. As soon as he's able to, he rips free from the tomb. Dalinar growled, summoning his blade. Tanalan's men's eyes seemed to glow. They gathered and grinned at him. He could see the thrill in their expressions. Blood streaming down the side of his face, Dalinar grinned back at them. They rushed to attack. And then we just get, like, a page break, and it just says, Dalinar saw only red. He found himself pounding a man's head repeatedly against the stones. Behind him lay a pile of corpses with burned eyes. He turned to the side where Oathbringer protruded from a rock. The gemstone on the pommel was cracked, so he couldn't dismiss it. He stumbled to his feet, looking around for more foes, but none came to challenge him. Drained, he bound the worst of his wounds, then grabbed Oathbringer and set it on his shoulder. He started walking. Along the way, he discarded pieces of shard plate, which grew too heavy as they leaked stormlight. The thrill returned to urge him on. In that darkness, shadowed figures seemed to accompany him. Armies made of red mist at the corners of his vision, charging forces that fell to dust and then sprouted from shadow again. Not just men, but eyeless horses, animals locked in struggle, shadows of death and conflict to propel him through the night. He hiked for an eternity. He stalked through the darkness toward his own camp on the field. There was another army here, Sadius's. Dalinar made for his command tent, and he shook his head, seeing red at the sides of his vision. The flaps burst apart, and Sadius gaped, then stumbled to the side. Dalinar walked straight in. Inside, generals and officers gathered. Evie, comforted by brightness Kalami, was weeping. All eyes turned toward Dalinar. Taleb says that they'd sent scouts when Tanalan had turned on them here, and the scouts had said that Dalinar was dead. Dalinar says that the scouts must have been traitors working with Tanalan, and Taleb says that when they'd informed Gavilar about what happened, the king had wanted to avenge Dalinar himself so they would hold a siege on the rift. "Too slow," Dalinar said. "High Prince Sadius proposed another option," Taleb said. "But the king..." Dalinar looked to Sadius. "They used my name to betray you," Sadius said. "We will suffer rebellions like this time and time again unless they fear us, Dalinar." Dalinar nodded slowly. "They must bleed. I want them to suffer for this. Men, women, children. They must know the punishment for broken oaths. Immediately." Evie is horrified by him and tries to talk him down, but Sadius insists that they have to act. Dalinar agrees and tells Taleb to order the camp soulcaster to get to work making oil. He tells somebody to take Evie to his tent so that she's out of the way. "In the morning, we make Rathalos an example. I promised Tanalan that his widows would weep for what I did here, but that is too merciful for what they've done to me. I intend to so thoroughly ruin this place that for generations, nobody would dare build here for fear of the spirits who will haunt it. We will make a pyre of this city, and there shall be no weeping for its passing, for none will remain to weep." And that is the end of the chapter. Chapter 76 is titled An Animal, and it has Dalinar's flashback symbol. It's 11 years ago. The red mist was still there, coloring his vision. "Brightlord," a messenger woman said, "an envoy is leaving the city, flying the flag of truce." "Shoot them dead," Dalinar said. "Sir?" "Arrows, woman. Kill anyone who comes out of the city and leave their bodies to rot." "Yes, Brightlord." The messenger ducked away. Dalinar looked up toward Sadius. Sadius nodded in approval, then gestured to the side. He wanted to speak in private. Dalinar was so numb, he could barely feel anything aside from that burning within. He stepped with Sadius out of the tent. Sadius tells Dalinar that he was able to stop the scribes from telling Gavilar that Dalinar was still alive. They agree that Gavilar would not be able to do what needed to be done here. Sadius promises Dalinar that he would never betray Gavilar, that he has no interest in being king, and wants the kingdom to stand for centuries. Sadius says that he had honestly been worried about Dalinar betraying Gavilar, and Dalinar tells him about the time he'd almost struck Gavilar down. Dalinar says that he knows now that his role is to be the person capable of doing what needs to be done without being held back by the throne, and that Gavilar would need to be able to disavow what they were about to do. Dalinar strode back into the tent, Sadius following. He pulled Oathbringer from the rock. "Time to attack." Amaram turned from where he stood with the other generals. "Now, Dalinar, at night? The bonfires on the wall should be enough." "To take the wall fortifications, yes," Amaram said. "But Brightlord, I don't relish fighting down into those vertical streets in the night." Dalinar shared a look with Sadius. "Fortunately, you won't have to. Send the word for the men to prepare the oil and flaming brands. We march." In under a half hour, men charged the walls. They broke through, securing a section. "I need a squad of elites," Dalinar said softly to a nearby messenger, "and my own barrel of oil. Have them meet me inside the walls." Dalinar passed through the now open gates of the wall. Sadius met him there. "They fought like Voidbringers, more vicious than last time, I'd say." "They know what is coming," Dalinar said, walking toward the cliff edge. "We checked it for a trap this time," Sadius noted. Dalinar stopped at the edge of the cliff, looking down at a city built on platforms. Their city was grand, a monument of human ingenuity and grit. "Burn it!" Archers gathered with arrows ready to ignite while other men rolled up barrels of oil. "There are thousands of people in there, sir," Taleb said. "Tens of thousands." "This kingdom must know the price of rebellion. We make a statement today." "Obey or die?" Taleb asked. "The same deal I offered you, Taleb. You were smart enough to take it." "And the common people in there? The ones who didn't get a chance to choose a side?" Sadeus snorted from nearby. We will prevent more deaths in the future by letting every Bright Lord in this kingdom know the punishment for disobedience. He stepped up to Dalinar. You were right about the scouts who turned traitor. We bribed one to turn on the others and will execute the rest. The plan was apparently to separate you from the army, then hopefully kill you. Even if you were simply delayed, the Rift was hoping their lies would prompt your army into a reckless attack without you. They weren't counting on your swift arrival. Or your tenacity. The soldiers unplugged barrels of oil, then began dropping them down into the city. Flaming brands followed. Tanalan soldiers tried to organize a fight back out of the Rift, but they'd surrendered the high grounds. Dalinar watched as the fires spread. He then walked back, leaving a solemn Taleb to gather his remaining elites. Captain Lord Kadash had 50 for him, along with 2 barrels of oil. Follow. Screams below, then cries of pain, calls for mercy. People flooded from buildings, shouting in terror, fleeing on walkways and steps toward the basin below. Many buildings burned, trapping others inside. Dalinar led his squad along the northern rim of the rift until they reached a certain location. His armies waited here to kill any soldiers who tried to break out. The fires hadn't reached up here yet, though Sadeus's archers had killed several dozen civilians who had tried to flee in this direction. For now, the wooden ramp down into the city was clear. Dalinar led his group down one level to a location he remembered so well, the hidden door set into the wall. It was metal now, guarded by a pair of nervous Rifter soldiers. Kadash's men shot them down with shortbows. He stepped over one of the corpses, then tried the door, which was no longer hidden. It was still locked tight. Tanalan had decided to go with security instead of secrets this time. Unfortunately for them, Oathbringer had come home. Dalinar easily cut off the steel hinges. He stepped back as the door slammed forward. "Light those," he said, pointing to the barrels. "Roll them down and burn out anyone hiding inside." The men hurried to obey, and soon the tunnel of rock had fitful black smoke pouring from it. Nobody tried to flee, though he thought he heard cries of pain inside. Dalinar watched as long as he could, until soon the smoke and heat drove him back. The rift behind him was becoming a pit of darkness and fire. Dalinar retreated up the ramp to the stones above. Archers lit the final walkways and ramps behind them. It would be long before people decided to resettle here. High storms were one thing, but there was a more terrible force upon the land, and it carried a shard blade. Those screams. Dalinar passed lines of soldiers who waited along the northern rim in silent horror. He drew his lips to a line and shoved down the thrill. He would not let himself enjoy this. "Bright Lord," a soldier said. "Bright Lord, you must see this." Just below the cliff here was a beautiful white building, a palace. Farther out along the walkways, a group of people fought to reach the building. The wooden walkways were on fire and preventing their access. Dalinar recognized Tanalan the Younger from their encounter earlier. Trying to get into his home, Dalinar thought. Figures darkened the building's upper windows. A woman and children. No, trying to get to his family. Tanalan hadn't been hiding in the safe room after all. "Throw a rope," Dalinar said. "Bring Tanalan up here, but shoot down the bodyguards." The smoke billowing out of the rift was growing thick. Dalinar coughed, then stepped back as his men let down a rope. Tanalan hesitated, then took it, letting Dalinar's men haul him up. The bodyguards would scent arrows when they tried to climb up a nearby burning ramp. "Please," Tanalan said. "My family, please!" Dalinar could hear them screaming below. Tanalan slumped on the ground. "Please." "I," Dalinar said softly, "am an animal." "What?" "An animal reacts as it is prodded. You whip it and it becomes savage. With an animal, you can start a tempest. Trouble is, once it's gone feral, you can't just whistle it back to you. Blackthorn, please, my children! I made a mistake those years ago. I will not be so foolish again." And yet, those screams. Dalinar released a long breath. "It's enough," he said, turning toward Sadeus. "Let the rest of the people of the city escape out the mouth of the canyon below. We have sent our signal." "What?" Sadeus said. "Dalinar!" A loud series of cracks interrupted him. An entire section of the city nearby collapsed into the flames. The palace and its occupants crashed down with it. Tanalan shouted. "Dalinar," Sadeus said. "I prepared a battalion below with archers, per your orders." "My orders? You said to kill anyone who comes out of the city and leave their bodies to rot. I had men stationed below. They've launched arrows in at the city struts, burned the walkways leading down. This city burns from both directions, from underneath and from above. We can't stop it now." Wood cracked as more sections of city collapsed. The thrill surged and Dalinar pushed it away. "We've gone too far." "Nonsense. Our lesson won't mean much if people can merely walk away." Sadeus glanced toward Tanalan. "Last loose end is this one. We don't want him getting away again." He reached for his sword. "I'll do it," Dalinar said. Though the concept of more death was starting to sicken him, he steeled himself. This was the man who had betrayed him. Dalinar stepped closer. To his credit, Tanalan tried to leap to his feet and fight. Several elites shoved the traitor back down to the ground. Though Captain Lord Kadash himself was standing at the side of the city, looking down at the destruction. The thrill, incredibly, was not satisfied. Still, it thirsted. It didn't seem it could be satisfied. Tanalan collapsed, blubbering. "You should not have betrayed me," Dalinar whispered, raising Oathbringer. "At least this time you didn't hide in your hole. I don't know who you let take cover there, but know they are dead. I took care of that with the barrels of fire." Tanalan blinked, then started laughing with a frantic, crazed air. "You don't know? How could you not know? But you killed our messengers. Oh, you poor fool. You poor, stupid fool." Dalinar seized him by the chin. "What? She came to us to plead. How could you have missed her? Do you track your own family so poorly? That hole you burned, we don't hide there anymore. Everyone knows about it. Now it's a prison." Ice washed through Dalinar and he grabbed Tanalan by the throat. He strangled the man all the while demanding that he retract what he'd said. Tanalan died with a smile on his lips. Dalinar stepped back, suddenly feeling too weak to stand. "Go back! Search that hole! Go!" Kadash was on his knees looking woozy, a pile of vomit on the rock before him. Some elites ran to try to do as Dalinar said, but they shied away from the rift. The heat rising from the burning city was incredible. Dalinar roared, standing, pushing toward the flames. However, the fire was too intense. Where he had once seen himself as an unstoppable force, he now had to admit exactly how small he was. Insignificant. Meaningless. "Once it's gone feral, you can't just whistle it back to you." He fell to his knees and remained there until his soldiers pulled him away from the heat and carried him to his camp. 6 hours later, Dalinar stood with hands clasped behind his back and stared at a body on the table, covered in a white sheet. Behind him in the tent, some of his scribes whispered. Taleb's wife, Kalami, led the discussion. She thought that Evie must have defected. What else could explain why the burned corpse of a high prince's wife had been found in an enemy safe house? It fit the narrative, showing uncharacteristic determination. Evie had drugged the guard protecting her. She'd snuck away in the night. The scribes wondered how long Evie had been a traitor, and if she'd helped recruit the group of scouts who had betrayed Dalinar. He stepped forward. "Fool woman." The scribes didn't know Evie well enough. She hadn't been a traitor. She'd gone to the rift to plead for them to surrender. She'd seen in Dalinar's eyes that he wouldn't spare them. So, almighty help her, she'd gone to do what she could. Dalinar barely had the strength to stand. The thrill had abandoned him, and left him broken, pained. He pulled back the corner of the sheet. The left side of Evie's face was scorched, but the right side had been down toward the stone. It was oddly untouched. "This is your fault. How dare you do this? Stupid, frustrating woman." This was not his fault. Not his responsibility. "Dalinar," Kalami said, stepping up, "you should rest." "She didn't betray us." "I'm sure eventually we'll know what..." "She did not betray us. Keep the discovery of her body quiet, Kalami. Tell them my wife was slain by an assassin last night. I will swear the few elites who know to secrecy. Let everyone think she died a hero, and that the destruction of the city today was done in retribution." Dalinar set his jaw. Earlier today, the soldiers of his army had burned a city to the ground. It would ease their consciences to think that first the High Lady had been murdered. Kalami smiled at him, a knowing smile. His lie would serve a second purpose. As long as Kalami and the head scribes thought they knew a secret, they'd be less likely to dig for the true answer. "It's not my fault." "Rest, Dalinar," Kalami said. "You are in pain now, but as the high storm must pass, all mortal agonies will fade." Dalinar left the corpse to the menstruations of others. As he departed, he strangely heard the screams of those people in the rift. He stopped, wondering what it was. Nobody else seemed to notice. Yes, that was distant screaming. In his head, maybe? They all seemed children to his ears, the ones he'd abandoned to the flames. A chorus of the innocent, pleading for help, for mercy. And now, Evie's voice joined them. And that is where we are done for tonight. And as I told you, there might come a time where you hate Dalinar, and you're totally justified in it.
I don't. But if he didn't literally murder an entire city, but he was only killing a few people and he accidentally killed his wife, that could be forgivable. Mm-hmm. But he burned an entire city,
mm-hmm.
and didn't even realize that his wife was going to die.
I think it puts into a little more perspective why everybody is so fucking scared of the Blackthorn.
But they all think that it was retribution for his wife dying. Yes. They don't know.
Overcome with the thrill and decided, you know what? Fuck all these people.
That Spren is a lot more powerful than I thought.
The description of, like, as he's marching, he sees a red mist that turns into, like, visions in it is interesting with, you know, everything going on. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is what Dalinar did. We're not done, obviously, with Dalinar's flashbacks. Now we get to see the aftermath of this.
No wonder he became an alcoholic. Well, no, actually, yeah. He forgot her and then became an alcoholic.
Oh, he becomes an alcoholic before he forgets her, too. You'll see as we get into his chapters post this before
he makes it. Okay, so he becomes an alcoholic, forgets her, but is still an alcoholic.
I think by the time that he forgets her, he is no longer drinking. I think that's when he starts doing his whole thing of like, oh, I'm going to be better now. Like, Adolin, we need to follow the codes. Like,
wait, that so he is didn't, when... he didn't go to forget her until after Gavilar died?
No, he did not.
What?
You'll see when he went to meet with her. But he goes years after this before he goes to forget about it. Because this was 11 years ago and Gavilar died 6 years ago. So he goes at least 5 years before.
Jeez. He was an alcoholic for 6 years?
I'm sure that is not at all strenuous for his relationship with his two sons that already barely knew him.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have more Dalinar flashbacks. I think Dalinar's flashbacks are the most effective throughout the whole series so far for me, and a lot of it is what's going to happen next. Even though I think this chapter is a very effective chapter.
Oh, yeah. I can see why people hate him. And I will never forgive him for what he did. But who he is in the story now is so completely different that they're like two completely different characters.
It's a thing of like we got introduced to him before we knew what he did, right?
Yeah.
This is, you know, this is something I talk about with Darth Vader. How you accept the stuff with Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi because you didn't know that he slaughtered children in the Jedi Temple at that point. Like... when Return of the Jedi came out, the prequels hadn't happened yet. And it's a little more difficult if you show people what they do before you try to show them as, like, somewhat of a good person. It's harder to accept it then.
Well, I mean, there's bias against it, but also, maybe because if you are shown that they are terrible, and then you try to redeem them, you will never stop seeing them as that terrible person, but if you show them as a good person first and then show what the terrible things they did in the past, you've seen them as a good person. So it's not like they could never be a good person because they have become one. So I feel like that is something that you could only do if you do the present first or the good version first and then the bad version previous to that or after that.
Yeah. Next time, I think you'll be able to pick up on what's going on with Azor. Beyond that, we're very close to the end of part 3. All right, well, I'm going to wrap things up here. Guys, thanks for listening. We have a Discord server. Link to join that is in the episode description. Follow us on Twitter at SpeakStormlight. Email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. Follow our good friend Alex on Twitter at Alex_BeagBoy. They made all of our cover art. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you guys next time. As always, life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.